And another thing, you're listening to KPCRadio.com. I'm James. Thank you for listening. Before we get started, I want to remind everyone, because it's a new season here, we're back. I want to remind you how you can get in touch with us. We are on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/andanotherthing.kpcr. And please remember to like and share. That's been my motto the last 8 months so far. And also, you can email us if you'd like at andanotherthing.kpcr@gmail.com. Love to hear your comments. We had such a good time on the last show of last season that Robert has decided to join us permanently for this season. How you doing, Robert?
Great. He's not lying. I did have fun.
I never lie. That's the purpose of my show. I tell the truth because it's way much more fun than lying. That's from Hook, by the way. All right, so we had a good summer vacation there, a good 3 months, and then after 3 months of vacation, what do we need is another vacation after a week of school, which was Labor Day, which is why we're on the third week of school. So how was your summer?
Summer was good. I worked on a film production in the Salt Flats of Utah,
cool.
And then got severely dehydrated. Then we decided to go to Wyoming and all over the West for a road trip.
That's the best way to go hiking, is dehydrated.
Oh,
my
yeah.
wife and I did that once, nearly die in Joshua Tree. You just don't get the experience until you're crawling through a desert with the noon sun above you, just looking for shade.
Yeah, when it's 130 degrees outside.
Yeah,
you're in the wrong place.
And that's the only way to make Wyoming nice. I drove through there in the summer, too. Just a giant box of cornflakes. It's boring. I don't like it.
Wyoming is extremely beautiful, and you're skewing it. So, I mean, you're distorting it so
bad. I am a little biased because I'm such a city guy, I know. But, hey, I love California, too. So, you know, I like things with, you know, water and hills, you know, just not a box of cornflakes. But let's get to the actual point of what we're talking about today, because it's been in the news, and I realized it's something I need to talk about, because even my science channels on YouTube that I'm subscribed to are talking about this, and that is what's going on in Syria. I'm sure you've heard about this.
Yes.
It's been all over the place. And what I want to talk about today is not so much what is going on in Syria, mostly because I think no one really knows outside the Syrians, is because I want to talk about the reaction that everyone else has been having. More specifically, there's been fighting there for years, part of the Arab Spring, which you remember the Arab Spring, right?
Yeah.
Cairo, and everyone saying, mm-hmm. ooh, Twitter and Facebook, they started a revolution, which a lot of good came from it, right?
Yes, it did.
They got rid of the Egyptian president, whose name... Well, Mubarak, they got rid of him. They say Arab, was it not Arafat? What was the guy in, I forget his name. I know, that makes me a racist white guy. I don't remember their names. But we'll look that up later. But anyways, all those dictators were cast out because they could never spell it the same way. It was Gaddafi. That's what it was. Because I tried to
I
remember
was waiting
how to,
for you to catch yours.
I was, because I couldn't remember how to spell it, because it's spelled differently. But we don't have to worry about that anymore. He's gone. But in Syria, it's not over. They're still fighting there, full-blown civil war. I read on my, you know, Wikipedia search, so take that with a grain of salt, like over 100,000 dead on both sides. So since that's been going on, why do you think no one's been caring until now?
About the 100,000 dead?
Yeah, I mean, why are we not caring about those 100,000? We care about these guys with the gas. What is the big
thing
about
because
that?
It's... because they put it all over the news pundits that there is a war crime that happened.
Crime against humanity.
That's the talking point. Right. Chemical weapons use. And when somebody says the word invade.
Right. That gets
anytime somebody says the word invade or drop a missile, everyone's going to be alarmed.
Yeah, the Republicans all getting up in arms like, oh, we got to go drop bombs.
Yeah, they're gonna worry about it. And it's going to get the public's attention. Maybe after the 100,000 were killed, sadly, and everybody, maybe we should have paid attention from that
Most
point
Most people
on.
Probably didn't think it was their problem.
Right. And maybe that's an issue in itself. But when you mention a missile and invasion, that's it. Everybody's
right.
going to jump on.
And that came up because of the gas, because
yeah.
of the sarin gas. And I wanted to go off on a little diatribe here about what the word chemical means and why that would spark such a reaction. Now, I've always made fun of people who do organics and who hated the GMOs. I love GMOs. They're going to save the world. And organics, I don't buy that. That's a scam. You know, it's a banana for twice as much. Just get a regular banana. They're all clones anyway. And whenever there's a product or food sold, I love it when they say chemical-free, because that makes, one, makes me laugh, and two, makes me want to slap people. You know what I'm talking about? These natural, like the natural aisle in Ralph's?
Yeah, they say it's, oh, this is completely rid of chemicals. And
what is that? Everything's a chemical. Everything. Water is a chemical. All food is a chemical. This pen in my hand, I'm a chemical. You're a chemical. You calling me a chemical? You're a chemical.
I'm a good one.
Everything is a chemical. Everything in exists, past, present, and future, in all discovered and undiscovered dimensions, is chemicals. However, and this is the big, big however, as much as I make fun of people for hating, for using that word, and I hate how they don't know what it means, in this one particular instance, I always find it appropriate because chemical weapons is different from conventional weapons. Now, supposedly it's been, no, not supposedly, the UN inspectors have confirmed it's sarin gas. Now we're going to talk about a little bit that we don't know who used the sarin gas, but it is sarin gas. Now, do you know what sarin gas does exactly?
No, I do not.
It's, now, I wrote down here, is it worse than the gas chambers in the Holocaust? I thought that might be a little bit too much. Can you say it's worse? But it's different, because in the gas chambers that we usually think of, whether it's in the Holocaust in Germany or in the death penalty, it just makes you suffocate, and then just you pass out and you die. There's nothing really gritty, I guess would be the word about it. Sarin gas, now you know how muscles work. You know basic biology. Most people know that.
Right.
It's a signal from your brain, goes to the muscle, bioelectrics, and it makes your muscle, you know, move this way or that. What I didn't know until I looked this up is that there's no default state in your muscles. Like, you think that if you're not doing anything, your muscles are just relaxed, right? Like, it's an off. But there's no such thing as a permanent off. Now, they have to be permanently on or permanently off. So, which means you need a chemical for either one. Now, what sarin gas does is it inhibits the chemical that happens after the signal. So if I send a signal to my arm to flex my arm like I'm doing, you can't see because that's the magic of radio. Just imagine I'm lifting 30,000 pounds. Now, the chemical that said raise that, now when I stop raising the 30,000 pounds, now my arm doesn't know to stop. It needs some other chemical to say, okay, he's done, take away these electroinhibitors and the neurotransmitters is what they are, and then it'll relax. Sarin gas blocks that so that my muscles would just stay permanently tensed. It's like being completely and utterly tensed in every single muscle in your body, everything, your eyelids, your hands, your fingers. And eventually what that does is it makes you freeze. And of course, since our lungs have the muscles with the diaphragm, we eventually asphyxiate. And after excruciating torture and pain.
My goodness.
So, yes, that is an apt description of it. So that is why it has all these laws that for 100 years now, since World War I, nations have said, all right, we are not going to do this anymore. Now, that being said, now that we know that there is sarin gas being used by someone in Syria and is being used to kill civilians, should we do something about it? What do you think just off the top of your head when I say, should we go get them? What's your first reaction?
My first reaction is we shouldn't go and get anybody.
Okay.
Because, and this is conflicting, obviously, in the conversations I have with you and everyone else, it's the idea that you're going to go back into a territory like that.
Into someone else's country, you mean?
Right, again, with what we've gone through in the Middle East
right. Over
the course of the last 10-something years, it's a red flag. It scares everyone. I worry about the long, actually not the short-term effects, but the long-term effects of what this can do to a relationship between the Western world and the Middle East.
Because of how wonderfully we took care of Iraq.
Right. And so if we're gung-ho about entering another region and we're trying to be world police in doing so, that is our main goal.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a danger, an unintended consequence. Obviously, everything has unintended consequences.
Right.
But what if this is the last straw for a lot of people? On the flip side, some entity has committed a horrible crime against humanity with this. And maybe we can't just absolve ourselves of responsibility. Maybe every action we've taken since Iraq has led in some way to this kind of result. Whether it's us, whether it's Great Britain or what have you, but maybe we just can't walk away from it. What if we do have to do something? So I'm conflicted, but my initial reaction is, why go into this hole? What if it's actually worse than we think?
It's the second part of what you said that gives my first reaction, which is go and get them. Because I always try to be an idealist, you know, which makes me not on any side of any real issue. I'm always skirting in the middle, right?
Right.
Whether it's abortion or war or whatever. I always seem to be in the middle, just trying to be idealistic of what should be done. Because most people, especially in America, they talk... In fact, America, as you probably remember from philosophy class, gave birth to pragmatism. That's the actual pure American philosophy. Do what we need to do at the moment, and if it works, it's good. And I try to be idealistic, or say, well, what should it be done? Not just what can we do? Now, and the way I think of it, and as you already call us, the world police. Now, I don't know if I go so far as to say the United States is the world police or should be the world police.
Right.
But I would think there should be a world police in general right now. And I always thought, you know, that maybe as a kid, that's what I always thought it was because I lived in New York. I knew where the UN was. I'd hear things about it. Is that that's just what sounds what the UN is. You know, you think United Nations. Okay, so I guess there's – and you hear sometimes in action movies, Interpol. So my knowledge of international politics comes from action movies, just so you know.
Good. I'm glad. I'm going to make a note right now.
So Interpol, you know, whenever the cops don't know anything, whenever the feds don't know everything, they go, oh, let's go check this out in Interpol. Oh, and they – oh, France has warrants out from – so apparently there is a world police. Interpol means international police. But it's really just like a – literally police. They go for small crime. And you already mentioned this is a war crime, which sounds like an oxymoron, but is...
I know.
It sounds like... these are the right ways to kill people when you die. But so, but like we said, this is a crime against humanity, as you put it. And so should there be an entity that enforces these types of laws, especially when we made treaties a century ago after World War One, said, hey, we're not going to use this gas anymore. And so that's my initial reaction, is that yeah, someone should go over there and, you know, obviously maybe it was tanks that we would use before. Maybe we could use drones now. I don't know. It's something should be done. That's my first reaction. Now, obviously the UN isn't in that position. They don't have that type of power, which is what some people like, mostly people in the United States who are isolationists, which I know you wanted to say something about. They don't even like us having delegates at the UN, which always surprises me, because most of what the UN does is make treaties that are unenforceable, to put it shortly, whether it's trade, mostly the trade ones actually do get enforced, but it's always because the U.S. is the one doing it anyway. The U.S. practically leads the U.N. But anything else like military actions or even environmental actions, they're all voluntary and no one really polices it. Now, what do you think about the isolationist ideal of we should leave everyone alone and we shouldn't even be in the U.N.?
My gut reaction now at this stage in my life, 24 years old, of going through all these politics from what were we like? I was in seventh grade or sixth grade when they started invading. But my gut reaction
is when you started invading. You probably weren't even born.
With this whole problem
right.
Recent with Iraq. My gut reaction is I want to tell people to stay out. I don't want to. I'm tired of risking people's lives from this part, from our country. Mm-hmm. I have friends who are in the Marines or in the Army, and I'm tired of seeing people get sent out there. Well, we're going to have a missile strike. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And it always feels like what they're preaching to us about, oh, it's this, they're saying it's for a good cause. Sometimes it feels like it's not for such a good cause. And the large damage that can ensue from it is far greater than it's worth taking. So my gut reaction is, why get involved anymore? Is nobody exhausted? Is nobody just tired of dealing with this? However, maybe upon further examination, that is just not possible anymore.
Because we're all so interconnected?
We're so interconnected globally that some people out there rely on us, some small group of people rely on these types of countries who have large militaries to kind of back them up when they get stuck somewhere.
Right.
And some of those people hate us.
Not to mention we're interconnected on trade.
We're interconnected on trade.
There's always the oil issue, right? But I don't think there's too much oil in Syria.
I don't think so.
But it does apply still because it's part of that region. And that's another talking point of all the military guys in the Pentagon is regional stability. You know, one country goes, the next country, Iran and Israel start yelling at each other, rocks in the middle there. Saudi Arabia's there always, you know, holding hands with George Bush. Don't get too political. What are you, crazy?
This is
a college campus.
Right, but it's maybe it's not plausible anymore to think in the isolationist way. And maybe my gut reaction is over the top because I'm getting fed up. And I know a lot of people here are getting fed up. Look at all the protests you're having. People are just tired of hearing war and missile strike and invade. It's like, when are we going to finally take a breath?
Can we at least give peace a chance?
Have a few years to take a breath. But again, the world we've created, maybe that just isn't a realistic thing anymore. It just can't be.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, you're talking about protests. Isn't that what Syria is at its core. It's a protest that's perhaps gone too far. But again, we're not really, I don't really want to go into what exactly is the cause of this Syrian civil war, because I don't feel I'm qualified, one, as an American, because my news outlet leaves me, you know, craving American Idol. So, I mean, I don't know what's going on. And the intelligence community on both sides, they're not going to tell me the truth anyway. No. So all I can care about is our reaction to it. And when it comes to isolationism, it's funny you said it goes too far, because I always think it, when I meet an actual libertarian isolationist, like, why don't you take that to the extreme? Go away. Literally, just go away. If you want to be an isolationist, go isolate yourself. Go live in a cave, in a mountain, and just stop being part of society. Because when you get down to the actual nitty-gritty of their arguments, it's totally arbitrary. So they're okay with a nation. They're okay with a president that has power over 4,000 miles. But 10,000 miles, oh, that's too far. We can't help those people. So their concept of what nation means, and then when they start yelling about, oh, a world power is evil, it seems to be like they don't even understand what the purpose of government is to begin with, which makes sense because most isolationists are libertarians, and they literally believe the government is for, what, just roads? And most of the time, it's just that. They're like, just build the roads and leave me alone.
Right, but they also, I guess they don't factor in that trade is a huge part of...
Yeah, but that's when they go right to capitalism, right? They don't need a government. The visible hand, true. Right? And all that.
That's true. I just... You can't just have roads. There's going to be interference from other countries at some point.
Right. And so when I hear isolationists, I almost immediately tune them out because it seems like that's what they're asking for, right? It's like, they fine, then leave me alone. Stop using my roads that I paid for. You know, you isolate yourself off my taxes. Don't go to my schools. Don't use my water. And it's funny because I know a lot of them would actually want to do that. And half of me, you know, the vindictive part of me says, fine, go do that. You're going to die off in a few years. No one's going to care. But then that, you know, the whole point about this is being idealistic. And I can't let them do that. That's why I argue with them, is to bring them into civilization. We have to act together. We have to pay our taxes together and build, yeah, sure, the roads, right? But then all the other trade and regulation. Oh, and what's that? Oh, yeah, the cops. We need the cops.
Yeah.
Right? It's funny. And let's go off a little tangent here. I was visiting my dad this year, and he was a police officer. And I don't know how we were talking about the importance of different functions of government. He's like, who would you pay first? You know, you pay the cops first. And I actually disagree with him. Who do you think I said we would pay first on the government payroll? If we had to cut everything but one department, what do you think I said?
Pay first?
Yeah. Like, if we had to cut everything but one function of the government, what would you make that first priority?
Public safety.
Well, that's broad. But it's kind of like what I was talking about. I said the fire department. I said the fire department is more important than the cops. Because if one guy gets mugged, right, and the mugger goes away, you sure, but that one guy was mugged, and it doesn't really affect me too much directly. Like, maybe the mugger is still loose, but directly nothing has to. But if a fire starts and there's no firemen, then you have Chicago, San Francisco, Rome, London, and the whole city is flattened. So
that's true.
So, and that's also another one of my, because especially lately, because the fire departments have been cutting a lot, right? So that's another reason I always argue with libertarians. But maybe we can do a whole libertarian show later on.
You know a lot about them. I'm learning now.
Unfortunately, I know too much about them. So anyway, that's my point, though, right? Fire departments, cops, we have to come together to protect ourselves because we're a communal species. So how much does it make sense to say, okay, this 4,000-mile-wide country, that's where our cops are, that's where we care about. If anyone dies outside that, oh, well, you know, screw them. Who cares? That just doesn't seem very humanitarian, right?
It doesn't.
It's just not.
It doesn't, but it really, sometimes it's appealing. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes that's like, what about the people that are dying here?
Right. I was just expecting you to bring that up. You know, we have to worry about what the problems are here first, right?
Not necessarily, because obviously there are poverty in third worlds is much worse, but sometimes as the individual, if you're stuck in poverty out here, you're like, wait, what about me? What about this situation? Mm-hmm. I have gangs everywhere. What am I supposed to do?
Right.
I know you want to fight the bigger war, but I need to fight a battle.
Right. And this brings us right back to whether or not the USA should do it, because my answer to that would be, Well, that's a question of efficiency, right? You have a murder in the city, but you, let's say you have a murder in a city and then 10 burglaries and 5 rapes, right? You know, all the cops don't go after the murderer. And then, you know, the rapist is like, what about me? Hey, we have other problems here. No, you have cops for the murders, cops for the rapists, cops for the burglars. And it's the same here. We can solve the problems in our country, or at least address them, while simultaneously other people support the UN and address the chemical warfare that's going on the other side of the world. That's not beyond our capability. So that's why, in the end, when I say, yes, something should be done, my next caveat is, well, the USA shouldn't do it. Because I think we've proven we're not good at that.
So somebody else should police.
Whether or not it's the UN or maybe just a coalition of some of our allies, like maybe France and England and Germany. Wouldn't that be funny? Germany running in to rescue the Middle East. Now, if they can do it, fine. Let them do it. But and we were actually having this argument preparing for the show because you said, well, the USA can't do it. And don't, I mean, if I'm putting your words in your
mouth,
don't want
to
do that. Because of how they've treated Iraq so far and Afghanistan, how they mess it up. And I actually argued against that because I said you can't use the past to argue what we can do in the present. But considering I haven't seen a change in the military or the U.S. government, it's probable that they would just mess up Syria as much as Iraq.
Isn't that, I mean, I don't know. You tell me, isn't that reasonable to think if somebody has messed up a series of, if indeed they have messed up to our best of, to the best of our knowledge, if they've messed up a series of activities, you're like, wait, why should I expect this person to get the activity number 10 right?
Right. And that's completely correct if you're talking about persons, right? But a government is a collection of people, and especially in democracy, they're cycling through them all the time. So, you know,
that's true. It's different,
you know, we wouldn't elect black people or gay people 50 years ago. We do now. So you obviously things change.
Yes, they do.
But like I was saying, in the last 10 years, I haven't seen that change in the United States. So if anything happens, Obama, who already likes to kill his own citizens, maybe we'll talk about that. Oh, yeah. Drone strikes. Everyone loves drone strikes, right?
Wow.
So I don't think we should be doing anything there. Maybe, I don't know about the United Kingdom. I don't know too much about the politics there right now.
I don't think anybody would say, let's just let everyone let this go. Mm-hmm. I think we all want something to be done in some sense.
Well, I know some people don't. Some people don't.
I think the world police, if it's the UN, something needs to be addressed because you can't leave those people that died, innocent people that just died from chemical warfare.
Yeah.
But maybe, like you said, maybe the U.S. needs to take a little bit of a step back.
Just a little bit.
Look at the bigger picture.
And on another side note, some people have been using weapon of mass destruction. And a lot of people are still mad at Bush for lying about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And it's funny because I actually go back and forth. Like I said, I'm never really on one side. I'm always skirting the middle. He was kind of right because there were weapons of so-called mass destruction, because in technical terms, that includes chemical weapons. And Saddam Hussein was using that on his own people, just like Syria is now, supposedly. But we all know George W. Bush didn't mean that when he said it to us. He said nuclear, isn't that what he said all the time? And he said mushroom clouds. So we know what he was talking about. So he was trying to pull a fast one. But technically, if you want to go to the extent of this international law stuff, it is a weapon of mass destruction. It's something that just spreads out and not just humans, kills everything in its path. Animals, pests, everything. Just it clears out everything. And that's why it's so scary, because it's not bullets you can run from. It's not a bomb you can take shelter from. It'll get in your nose and you die.
It's the way you described it, that is probably the most devastating thing I've ever heard of.
And funny enough, it's one of the best weapons the military likes. I forget what the actual phrase of it is for. It keeps the structural stability or integrity of the actual city intact, so you could use their water supplies, because it disintegrates right away after killing everybody.
So you
don't have to bomb the infrastructure. It is.
It's brutal.
But that's
to
what
hear.
They think about. All right, we're running up on a minute left, and I just wanted to close with an Eddie Izzard quote. Because he talked about Pol Pot and Stalin and Mao Tse. I can't say that name. I'm sorry. I know I'm a white guy. But they all killed their own people. And apparently everyone's okay with that. Hitler killed his own people for years. And everyone's like, oh, silly guy. Oh, but then he invaded Poland. Oh, stupid man. We'll only let you do that for a few years. So apparently that's the attitude of the world today. Kill your own people. Get a medal. And you get to be a conqueror, right? So wow. Maybe if Syria invaded Kuwait, like Saddam Hussein is, we'd be behind it. But we'll see how it goes, and maybe I'll do a quick update on next week. But for now, thank you for listening to me. This is And Another Thing on KPCRadio.com. I'm James.
I'm Robert.
Thanks a lot.